Today's podcast is brought to you by, for the first time,
two
sponsors.
Hey.
We are literally growing by dozens of dollars a day.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
This is fantastic. And we should preface these sponsorship bits by saying that we only accept sponsors on the podcast if they have a product that we really support, believe in, and or use if possible.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we can't use the first sponsor's product, Health IQ, because they are US life insurance and we are Canadians.
But it's still amazing because it's something that you used to rant and rave about all the time when you were an investment advisor, the fact that healthy people paid more for life insurance than unhealthy people, but no more.
Yes. Health IQ has set up their company in such a way that triathletes, swimmers, cyclists, runners, vegans, people who take care of themselves can get as much as a 25% savings on their life insurance, which really just makes sense. That's the way that it should be. That was one of the ranty and ravey things because guys like me, I had to pay just as much as
the burger and fries, never getting off the couch guy.
Yes. Yes. Not ideal. If you want to learn more about Health IQ, go to healthiq.com/triathlonTaryn. They've bundled up all of the triathlete specific information there. Or if you end up calling in or just going to the website on your own, use the code triathlonTaryn. It's not going to save you any money because Health IQ is already
saving you the money.
Ideally saving you money. But let's Health IQ know that you came from us and helps support the show.
And our other sponsor, welcome to the show, Four Sigmatic and their mushroom coffees / drinks.
That's right. This is one that I actually use. I started using Four Sigmatic in early 2017 because I was finding that just the 3 cups of coffee that I have a day was enough to kind of get me addicted. Like I was feeling like I craved it, even though I didn't really want it.
And it didn't taste good.
And by the end of it, like you get that acid feeling and an energy crash at the end of the day. Not with Four Sigmatic. They only have 50 milligrams of caffeine, which is about a quarter to a half as much as a typical cup of coffee. And because it's mushroom based, you don't have that energy crash. You don't have the stomach rot. It's tasty stuff.
Well, and this applies too to non-coffee drinkers because these drinks have benefits that a lot of people can use or would be beneficial to them because they're benefits. So they're made out of mushrooms, all kinds of different mushrooms, cordyceps, lion's mane, chaga, and all of these mushrooms are being found. There's tons of research going into it that they're huge for things like, you know, immune function.
The chaga elixir is not necessarily a coffee, more of an immune booster.
Right. And then there's lion's mane, which supports memory and concentration. You had that this morning. You are clearly on the ball right now.
I am firing on all cylinders right now.
So really cool stuff. Tastes really good. You love the taste of it. You drink this stuff all the time now. And again, tons of benefits for coffee drinkers and non-coffee drinkers alike.
Yeah. And we've worked out a deal with Four Sigmatic that if you go to foursigmatic.com/triathlonTaryn or use the coupon code triathlonTaryn, you can save 15% on any order. Not a first order, not a second order, not like limited time only, all the time. Disclosure, that is an affiliate link, so it does help us out if you use that, but help me help you.
Yes, it's good. Go buy it. Yes. Now on to the show.
Today's guest is Lindsay Corbin. We talked to Lindsay after meeting her actually separately twice in 2013 and 2017.
17.
Just this past year at Kona. And a little bit of info. Part of Lindsay's story, her hubby, is one of the reasons that I got into YouTube. So we talk about that in today's interview. And what else, NTK?
We talk about her dog, which is my favorite part of the interview.
Yeah. We talked in Kona while we were chatting with her about, you know what, can we just make it a dog cast?
Yeah. We talk about some of her race highlights. Of course, she's a very accomplished female pro. Talk about some of her big years, big wins, and a couple of very disappointing, very frightening down years for her and how she came out of them and has used them to kind of thrive and learn.
Yeah. Lindsay has been a real staple in the sport for about 12 years now. She still holds the female Ironman American course, like all time fastest female Ironman time. She's been to 11, she believes, Konas and never placed out of the top 15. She has a high placing in Kona of top 5, 5-time Ironman champion, 20-time Ironman finisher, 20 plus for sure, 11 Ironman podium finishes, like just a staple in the sport for the past decade and
just
a nice
cool
person.
Gal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really great to talk to. So why don't we listen to her talk to us now?
Deal. I'm in. So welcome to the podcast here, Lindsay. Thank you very much for doing this. I'd like to start off I promised you in Kona when we met up that we were going to chat a lot about Chimmy here, your golden retriever. I just noticed on your Instagram that the first story that you've got posted is Chimstagram or Chimmystagram. Introduce the guy. He is, in my mind...
Oh, it's a girl.
Oh,
my
bad. Female?
No,
my
am
bad.
I wrong?
Female?
Yes. No, it's a girl. A lot of people call her a boy, though. Because I think she looks like one and her name's maybe masculine, but she's a girl. Yes.
Taryn guessed that it's Chimmy after Tom Hanks' song in Big. Was he right?
No, actually, I don't even know what song that is, but she's named, I raced the Pucone 70.3 for gosh, 3 or 4 years in a row. And 1 year after the race, we went to Argentina after. And my husband is a huge fly fisherman. He's not a triathlete. And in Argentina, there was a river, the Chimuen River, and he fished it there. And we just had the whole trip was wonderful. I'd won the race, so it was just super memorable. And then we went to Argentina and spent about 10 days there, and we fished the Chimuen River. And Chris, after having a bottle of wine and a nice steak that night, announced that our next dog would be named Chimuen. So her full name is Chimuen after the Chimuen River in Argentina, which had... amazing fly fishing and good memories for us. We call her Chimmy for short. And on Instagram though, any picture I post of her, it's Chimstagram.
Chimstagram.
That's very cute. And yeah. A great story for a dog's name. We have a dog named Gracie because she's gray. So, you know, that's as in-depth as we get.
Yeah. And then the other guy is Petey. So we just inherited him. We're not good with names.
No. That's a great story though.
Let's take things back a little bit here. I know that, you know, in a lot of interviews, we want to talk about like the here and now, the news, and we'll get to that. I want to go back to like, how did you originally get into the sport of tri? Because I know that you started out as a runner at UC Davis. At what point do you start thinking, you know what, I'm going to add a couple more sports to this one?
Yeah. So I actually transferred from UC Davis to the University of Montana. And I was just sort of studying exercise physiology and sort of making friends. And there was a large social group that participated in a local club triathlon team. And then we also had a local university team. And so originally it was more just a social outlet. The people that I was studying with and hanging out with sort of were involved in the sport. And it was just more, like I said, it was social. It was what we did on the weekends. It was kind of fun. And so I volunteered at the local sprint triathlon, and that was sort of my first taste of it. And it's the Grizzly Triathlon in Missoula, Montana. And I really loved watching it. And then it just kind of rapidly went from there. I joined the triathlon team. I joined the university club team, and we raced the collegiate race. We had a couple of them. One was in Havasu, Arizona, and then Wildflower, which is sort of the famous race we went to every year. And so yeah, I just joined the club team, and it kind of escalated quickly. I did a sprint triathlon. I did an Olympic distance. The next year I did a half. And then as I was finishing up school in 2006, I wanted to do sort of something really big and memorable. And a bunch of people from the exercise physiology lab were doing Ironman Coeur d'Alene. So I decided in 2006 I would do my first Ironman. So it happened quick. I think my first triathlon was in 2004, 2003. And then, I did an Ironman shortly after. So
you came
kind of
out
a
of
long
the,
answer.
No, you came out of the gates hot there, right? Like you were setting age group records at Wildflower, right? And, obviously with your running background that helped. Was there something about triathlon though, that you got fulfillment from that running didn't provide?
I had ran competitively in high school, and just the college athlete format wasn't for me. I'm a really competitive person, but I just hadn't really ever taken a break from sport. And so initially I took a break when I moved to Montana and was just doing things like backpacking and, I don't know, hanging out on the river, hanging out with my boyfriend, who's now my husband, Chris. And Yeah. And I just kind of missed that competitive sort of itch had to be scratched. And so Chris actually dared me to enter a running race, and I entered the local 5K and just had a blast at it. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh yeah, I am a competitive person and I am really goal oriented. And so that kind of is what then sort of linked me into training with the club team and those guys. So yeah, I don't even really exactly remember what your question was, but it did happen quickly too. I mean, once I applied myself to a triathlon training plan, my fitness and success sort of grew quickly with it. And so I was very fortunate to kind of have success right out of the gates. And yeah, maybe it's good genes. And I just think, yeah, I had the right mindset as well.
Something you said there just twigged with me, that it was doing those races and doing the 5K, et cetera, that made you realize that you are competitive and that you are goal oriented. Whereas it's often a lot for a lot of people the other way around, where they're competitive and goal oriented and they need to find somewhere to channel that, and triathlon provides that. So it's kind of interesting to me that you discovered it the other way around, sort of.
Oh no. I mean, like, I think that I've always been like a competitive person and a goal oriented, like I've enjoyed ticking the boxes, but I just had sort of taken a break from sport and from following a training plan and from being coached and from having any sort of big goals. And so that transition from, and sort of that break between running and kind of, okay, what am I going to do next? Like, I wasn't really sure. And I really enjoyed backpacking and hiking and doing these adventurous sort of endurance type activities. And I guess I was looking for somewhere to channel that energy, and I wasn't really sure where it was. So yeah. And then the other thing too, was my parents have always been really active and they do a lot of bike touring. And so for recreational, kind of for fun, I went on a couple bike tours with them, and that was my first exposure to riding a bike. And I just loved this idea. We rode from Spokane, Washington to Seattle, Washington. And just this idea of pushing yourself to the limit on two wheels and getting to the top of a hill that a car would normally drive, you know, biking over a pass and knowing that you could cover 500 or whatever miles all to your own physical capabilities. Like, I was really drawn to that. And once I did that, I knew like, oh, okay, I can ride a bike and I can run. Maybe if I learned how to swim, I could do this thing called a triathlon. And so that's kind of what drew me to it as well.
Well, that's interesting. So you're saying, if I can learn to swim, what was your swimming ability? How comfortable were you at the time?
Yeah, so I had zero swimming ability other than going to the lake and the beach with friends and splashing around in the water. But until 2004, when I picked up triathlon, like, I'd never owned a pair of goggles. I'd never seen a time clock. I'd never done a flip turn. So I was very green. I didn't know what I was doing. So yeah, I mean, I definitely was an adult onset swimmer. I think I was in my early 20s when I learned how to swim for the first time. And it still is something that I'm continuing to work on.
How did you deal with that going into the pro ranks? Because you see Lionel Sanders, I think he's like the current pro who's working on his swimming incessantly right now that we all hear about. Was it like an obsession for you, or did it come around fairly quick with your athletic background?
I wouldn't say it was an obsession. I mean, I don't know. The swim is just something
that I'm still endless
trying
pool
to warm up to. Like, I don't understand people that when they were 15 years old could get up in the dark and go jump into a cold swimming pool. I just don't relate to that. Yeah. I mean, it was just, I guess I like the challenge. I really like learning new things. And the beauty of not learning to swim till you're older in life is you're constantly improving and learning new techniques or things that you can alter with your stroke or with your training. So I'm constantly improving. So that's good. But it's definitely a work in progress. I mean, I think you look at people like Lucy Charles or Lauren Brandon that are just amazing swimmers, and they could probably not swim train at all and they still would be amazing swimmers. And for someone like me, I'll continually have to be in the water 6 to 7 days a week, or 6 to 7 swims a week, at least through the end of my career.
Mm-hmm. Just to keep that form. Can you think back to that first year or two? Were there any lessons that you remember still back then that you had like a light bulb moment about your swim training?
I was never really horrible, but I was never really great. But when I raced as an amateur athlete, you could kind of get away with it. But I specifically remember, well, my first pro race was actually also my first Ironman, Coeur d'Alene. And 2 weeks before the race, I had initially signed up to race it as an age group athlete, but I had qualified for my pro license. And I was had so much anxiety about the group mass start of 2,000 people starting together. And I was weighing back and forth of like, oh, maybe I should race it as a pro. Maybe I shouldn't. And half of my incentive for racing it as a pro was that we had our own head start and I would only have to start with 30 people and I wouldn't have to start the swim with 2,000 people. So that was half of my incentive for getting my pro card was that maybe I wouldn't have to do the crazy mass swim start. The other thing that was sort of a light bulb for me was I raced the Vineman 70.3, I think a month after Coeur d'Alene, and the gun went off and everyone was gone. And I felt like I was still on the starting line. And that was the first swim where I swam all by myself. I was completely left in the dust. I don't think I was completely recovered from Ironman Coeur d'Alene yet, but that was a wake up call that swimming and racing as a professional is much, much different than swimming and racing as an age group athlete. So that's kind of a long way to get to the answer of what you asked me, but yeah, it's definitely a different race and a different strategy. And my weakness was for sure exposed there.
Well, that leads into, I think, one question that I wanted to hit on that I had saved for a little bit later. But like you've been around with, I would call it pre-ITU triathlete in long course racing, like the Jan Frodenos coming into it and dropping the pace. And this year, we're going to see Javier come into it. And now you're seeing that's the norm, that there's going to be a handful of former ITU athletes that have come into the sport. How has it changed besides just the times getting faster?
Yeah, I mean, I think the intensity has gone up as well. And I mean, it even started before the ITU athletes. I mean, I was racing Ironman before Chrissy came along. And then I think I'd only raced a couple years and then Chrissy came. But I just think that level of competition has raised all of our levels and it's opened your eyes more to what's possible. So not that we were out lollygagging around the course when I did my first Ironman, but the intensity is much greater across the board. And I just think you see what Chrissy, Daniela, Holly Lawrence, these athletes are doing at the 70.3. And I mean, even 70.3 racing, my first few years of 70.3 racing, I paced it. And now there's no pacing. You just go from the gun as fast as you can for 4 hours and however many minutes it takes to get to the finish. So yeah, the intensity has increased a lot, which in turn, the times have gotten faster. And I also think people race a lot more frequently. So yeah, there's definitely been some changes for sure.
Tactically in the middle of the race, does that actually take out some of the tactics? Because you used to pace it and, mm-hmm. you know, have a little bit of forward and backward and surge and drop back. And now is it just like hang on for dear life and hopefully you don't blow up?
Yeah, I think for sure in the 70.3 races for me, it's just swim as hard as I can, ride as hard as I can, and then just see what's left on the run. Luckily, I do come from a running background. So I feel like I can usually maintain on the run or move up a little bit. But for the Ironman, I mean, I think that with the duration of that race, just being out there for 9 hours or so, you have to for sure include some smarts with it as well. I mean, nutrition and pacing is so important with that. But I think tactics also aren't necessarily involved in Ironman. Ironman is a lot more racing yourself and racing your own capabilities. In some of the bigger races like Hawaii, there's tactics for sure, particularly in the swim, both for half Ironmans and fulls. But a lot of the times for me personally, I'm just out there doing what my race plan is. And that plan usually revolves around myself and not what others are doing. But you have to be reactionary to what's going on around you at the same time as well.
At what point did you decide that going pro was going to be it and that was where your life was going to take you? Like what were your life plans before pro triathlon became your life?
Yeah, so I wasn't exactly, I had just finished school and studying exercise science, and I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do, if I wanted to continue going to school or go down another avenue. And so I wasn't exactly sure. And in 2006 was kind of my first year that I did a few pro races, but I still was going to school and kind of working. And then in 2007, that was the first year that Chris and I had been married. And I told Chris that I just wanted to try it for a year of just going full-time professional, you know, having a coach and not working and really focusing on training and recovery and just see if I could make any money. And if I could make some money, I would keep sort of giving it a go. And if I couldn't, then I would go back and get a job or figure out kind of what I was going to do next. So I think I was kind of in that weird transitionary phase, you know, early 20s, trying to figure it out. And I definitely did not think at the time, like, oh, you'll be doing this 10 years from now still. Well, so that, I mean, that wasn't my goal when I decided to take it up of like, oh, I'm going to be a full-time pro and that's sort of going to define who I am and define my career. I thought it was, you know, initially I really just wanted to qualify and race Ironman Hawaii. And then it sort of all came together and happened rather quickly. So
do you think that's a common story or do more pros, you know, because obviously I'm sure you're friends with so many of them on the circuit. Do you think that's a common story or do more of the pros sort of go into it in their younger years saying, okay, this is my goal to become a pro triathlete. This is how I'm going to make my money and my living, really no other plans to have another career. I mean, I know some do go that route, but what do you think? Do you feel like your story is a little bit more or less common?
I think it's a variety. I feel like in the United States with the American professional athletes, maybe not as much. I mean, you look at these people that have an ITU background and a lot of them have been in the sport a long time. A lot of the people I know from Australia, New Zealand, Europe, they've been doing competitive sport, competitive swimming, triathlon, since they were a lot younger. And I think triathlon's still a young sport, particularly in the US. So I think it's different for every athlete. I mean, I definitely know athletes that have been in triathlon since they were in their teens. And then I know other people that picked it up later as well. And I mean, I think that that's the unique thing about our sport is it attracts such a variety of athletes that come from such different backgrounds as well.
Can you remember a single race where you thought to yourself afterwards, like, I'm going to make it. This is it.
I mean, well, the race where I knew I thought I would race professional is as I was getting ready for Coeur d'Alene, I raced Wildflower as sort of a tune-up race. And that was in early May. And I raced it as an age grouper. And granted, the age group race is much different than the professional race. But at the end of the race, it turned out I think I would have finished third overall with the pros with my time. And I set a new course record. And I think I biked, you know, close to what Sam McGlone or Natasha Bodman had biked. And so for me, that kind of was like, oh man, you know, people were comparing me to these top level pros. And that was sort of the first thing of like, oh, maybe I could do this as a professional athlete. And then in 2008, I raced Ironman Hawaii and I finished fifth that year. And that was a total shock slash surprise. I was not expecting that at all.
So maybe that was the race.
Yeah. And I mean, I think I was in third place on the Queen K in the marathon and I did not even know what I was doing. And after I finished fifth in 2008 at Kona, that just opened a lot of opportunities for me and doors for me. And that's when I kind of realized like, okay, if you really apply yourself and put your heart and soul into this, you can have a lot of success with it.
Kind of like, we're going to give this a go for a while.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to kind of jump around here in the timeline and let's say like go forward here to 2014 is what I want to do. You know, you have success in Kona, podiums all over the place. And I think it was 2014 that you had said that you made a real shift in, I want to say coaching, your race strategy, your prep strategy. You started over and even moved at the same time. Why change when everything was going okay?
Yeah, I actually thought that in 2013, I had flatlined a little bit. I dealt with an injury that year and I wasn't able to race for a lot of the year. And towards the end of 2013, I was training in Bend, Oregon, which is coincidentally also my hometown. And I was introduced to a physiotherapist, Jay DeSherry, and he was helping me with rehab for my injury. And Jay kind of opened my mind and eyes during sort of my rehab to a lot of different methodologies to training. just because I was getting ready for Kona, but I didn't have the run mileage in my legs due to my injury.
What was your injury? If I can ask.
I had a stress fracture in my tibia and I didn't run basically from July all the way till pretty much mid-August, late August. So I really only had pretty much a month of running under me leading into Ironman Hawaii. And I ended up having, all things considered, a decent race. I finished 10th in 2013 at Ironman Hawaii. And after the race, I kind of was just thought, you know, Jay had really opened my eyes to all this new type of training. And I just was looking for some fresh ideas. And overall, 2013 was just kind of a disappointing year for me. You know, ending in Kona was kind of the highlight of the year. 10th place was great considering the year I had. But yeah, I just look back and I thought, you know, I really had enjoyed the training and time I spent in Bend. I enjoyed working with Jay and just being open to new types of training and ideas of training. And so I decided I wanted to switch things up for 2014. And so, yeah, I did. I had a lot of changes. We did end up deciding to move to Bend for Montana. And then I started working with current coach now, Jesse Kropelnicki of QT2 Systems. And then Jay and I still work together. He sort of runs all my strength training and is also my physiotherapist. So I see him once a week just for all types of work. So yeah, so I had a lot of changes in 2014 and I think it just came at a good time in my career for me. And then I had a great year of racing in 2014. So the changes paid off.
Yeah, you started off right away with what, 2 wins, 2 seconds, as far as I can see. And then what happened towards the end of the year? Because 2015 isn't even listed on your website. And I know that you had injury and sickness, and that was kind of the start of a string of a year or two of crap luck. But what happened towards the end of the year?
Yeah, I definitely had some bad luck in 2015. It was just kind of one piece of bad luck after the other. I got sick pretty early in the year after training camp. I picked up a bug in March, and then I traveled to South Africa to race the Ironman, and I got a horrible bacterial and viral infection. And it was one of those, like, you hear of people that travel to a foreign country and get sick and can't start a race, but you never think it's going to happen to you. And it definitely happened to me in South Africa. It was probably the most sick I've ever been in my career or life. I was so ill. I couldn't even leave the hotel room. There was no way I could have started the race. And then,
would that have been a foodborne illness? Like, do they know how you contracted it or what happened?
I don't really know. I think my immune system was just worn down from being sick in March. And then I picked up something. So it definitely wasn't a foodborne, like it wasn't a 24-hour food poisoning type of thing. I mean, I was sick for 2 to 3 weeks. And then we flew home from South Africa. I wasn't able to race. And I tried to race St. George 70.3. And I finished the race and my hip flexor was really irritating me. And it turned out that I ended up breaking my leg in the race and getting a stress fracture in my femur, right up in the head of the femur where the ball and the socket come together, which is just a very dangerous place to have a stress fracture. And I ended up, it took basically from May until November to heal. It just was a long road. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot in 2015, just about my body and healing and metabolically, and just some good lessons were learned. It's kind of, I think in the past I've had stress fractures from overtraining, and this I just think was systematically, like, a stress fracture is just that, it's just stress. And my body was worn down from being sick in March to being sick in April to, you know, I was barely training when I did get that stress fracture. So I just think metabolically my whole system was not happy with me. So I didn't really race at all in 2015. I think the only race I started and finished was that St. George race, but I broke my leg in it. That's why it's not on the webpage.
Looking back, now that you've got those lessons that you talk about, what would you have changed?
Yeah. So I was on birth control for a long, long time. I actually never got my period when I was younger, I think just from running and delayed puberty. And just, I think the period is a good indicator of if your body's healthy and balanced. And so I didn't know what was going on with my system hormonally. And I just think I got off birth control in 2015. And I just think having a period is a good indicator of if your body's healthy and if it's not. And it took a while for my period to come back, and I had to put on a little bit of weight. And I don't think I was running too skinny at all, but I just think what we ask of ourselves is we're constantly demanding, and physiologically, I think you're always kind of walking a fine line. And so, I mean, I saw a couple endocrinologists that year just because it was taking a long time to heal and we couldn't figure out what was going on. And I went in for DEXA scans and all sorts of stuff. So as far as what I would change, I mean, I don't know if I would change much just because I got a lot of valuable lessons out of it, but I just think, you know, rest, recovery, listening to your body. I know that in South Africa, when I pulled out of the race, Paula Newby Frazier was there and she saw how sick I was. And she said, whatever you do, like, you're really, really sick right now. Make sure you respect, you know, the travel home and you don't jump into training right away when you get home. And not that I like blatantly ignored her advice, but I got off the plane and I kind of treated it like, oh, I just had a flu. It wasn't that big of a deal. And I got back into training right away. And it's, you know, if you're so sick that you're crawling on all fours to get across the hotel room and then sleeping on the floor, you're so weak and ill, like, it takes time to recover from that. And so, yeah, that was my regret. Sorry, turning off my phone.
No, that's okay.
Bringing on the computer.
Yeah, this kind of brings to mind something that I'm going through right now. So, like, I'm trying to make a go of turning triathlon into my career for different ways, not because I'm at all fast, but by sharing triathlonisms and my triathlon journey every single day on YouTube and through podcasts. And after my last race at the end of October last year, I've got some heel pain that makes it tough for me to go and share running advice and really get out and like push it hard. And like, I kind of feel the little tiny bits of stress of like, oh, you know what? I've got to train. This is my job. This is my career. This is my dream. As a pro, that's got to be like times 100. What is that like in that year where you can't race?
Yeah, it was definitely really tough mentally. It just, I think for me, I define so much of myself as a triathlete and as an athlete. So that was a really tough year for me because it just kind of felt never ending. And of course, I had days of being super down in the dumps of like, I may never race again. And, you know, not really staying in the present and in the moment. And I had days where I was great and I, you know, focused on the things I could do. And I sort of celebrated the little victories of was off crutches. And then I celebrated that I was pain free and steps like that. But I also had a lot of really, really hard days. And eventually the only way I could really heal was just shut everything down. And so I think right around early September or so, my husband threw down the gauntlet and was like, everything you've done this summer has not healed you. Why don't you like stop cross training, stop going to doctors, stop thinking about it, stop being hard on yourself, stop being depressed and just shut everything down and don't exercise, put on some weight and see if that helps. And basically that's what it took was I took, I think 6 to 8 weeks of absolutely nothing. I just sat on the couch. Like that was my job, was just sitting on the couch and resting and recovering and sort of getting my hormones back in check. And sure enough, I healed. So
that must have been mentally tough though, because I mean, I know what Taryn's like. If he, you know, gets a flu or a cold and can't work out for a couple of days, he is squirrely and has energy to burn. Yeah. Like when our dogs can't go for a run.
Yeah, it was for sure not the most fun summer.
I bet.
But it provided great perspective and it definitely gave me appreciation for the sport and being healthy. And I definitely haven't taken a single day for granted since that year. So.
Okay. Well, I'll get away from sticking the fork in your side there and bugging you with that crap couple of years. You came back in 2016, right? Raced your first race in I don't know how long in 2016. And that year was when you set an American course record all time, like fifth fastest all time. Was it 8:42:42?
Actually was in 2014.
Oh, it was?
So that was in 2014. And then 2016, I raced Ironman Cairns in Australia and was second. And I was on a couple different podiums that year. But it was still, it was a good comeback year. So 2014 was when I raced Austria for the second time.
Okay.
And set the record.
So that Austria race then, looking back on the career, how does it slot in with it, with the whole thing? Like, where does it fit?
Yeah, I I mean, it's obviously a super memorable day. One of the more special wins that I've had. Each Ironman win I've had has been completely different and serves sort of a special place in my memory. I was at a different place in my life for each of them, and I don't take any of them for granted at all. And that was just a special day. I actually didn't feel that great the first half of the race. I remember even thinking I wasn't even close to the lead, and you know, I didn't think I would be in the lead. And then the second half of the bike, I really came around and started to feel good. And running out of transition, I looked at my watch and I knew, like, okay, if you run close to 3 hours or under, you could be close to setting the record. And then halfway through the marathon, I saw I was still on track. And then pretty much with an hour to go, I thought to myself, days like this don't happen very often. You better do everything you possibly can to make this happen, because you don't know when this opportunity could happen again. And I just didn't want to waste a moment. And I really went for it, because like I said, I just have learned throughout my career. I've had lots of ups and downs, and I realize, you know, the ups are great, but I don't take them for granted. And the downs are not as much fun, but they make the ups worth it. And I just remember thinking over and over, like, you don't know if you'll ever have the chance to do something like this again. You know, you just got to get the most out of yourself and try and make it happen. And I did. So that was awesome. Yeah.
And that's especially a neat story, considering that you didn't feel good until like halfway through the race.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I didn't feel horrible. It's not like I was thinking like, oh, I want to drop out, I feel sick. But it wasn't one of those days early on where I was firing on all cylinders and just felt like, oh, this is so magical. But I definitely felt great on the run, and I felt great the last half of the bike. And like I said, the last hour of the run was pretty painful, but it's like, you just do everything you can to make it happen. And I actually won in Austria 2 years prior in 2012, and it was very, very hot that year. And I nearly passed out in the finish chute. I barely remember the last hour of the race. And I just was so bummed after the race that I couldn't remember this Ironman win. And I was just dizzy for the last hour, and it was just sheer survival mode. And so actually my only goal in 2014 was that I just wanted to like remember the finish shoot and have it be memorable. And so, yeah, I was just took on as much nutrition as I could handle. And thankfully it wasn't crazy hot out, so it made for perfect conditions.
Well, I like something you said there, which was that it occurred to you in that moment, you don't know when you're going to get this opportunity again, so let's make the most of it. And well, I think that's a good rule for life, right? We sort of take for granted life is going to continue on exactly as it is today, and you can put off things because, oh, you'll have the opportunity later, but you might not. And I mean, it's funny that you said that too. My coworker today asked me, are you going to go to South Africa with Taryn? Because he qualified for the 70.3 World Championships this September. Oh, yeah. Coming up. And I said, well, of course. I mean, what if he never gets the opportunity again? And you might think that that's kind of a defeatist way to look at it. Like, well, this could be the one and only chance, but you don't know what could happen. Yeah. Right. And so I love that you, in the middle of a race, sort of said, no, you got to kick it up, because you got to do it now. It's now or never.
Yeah. Well, I also think too, like, Ironmans are so special. You can really only do one or two a year. And, you know, you do the math, you've got like 5 years left and you're just like only eight chances. And I definitely admire a lot these Olympic athletes, like Michael Phelps or even Rennie in our sport, people that can show up at these world championship or huge events and perform time and time again, because that's definitely not been what a highlight of my career is. I've had highs, I've had highs, I've had lows, but just the ability to consistently perform time in, time out, event again and again, that takes a lot across, you know, many disciplines. So I'm impressed.
Well, let's get into this year. You took another bit of a different approach to the race this year. I don't really know what that means. I read it somewhere, and I'm like, you know what? From the outside, I can't see what she's talking about.
I don't know what you're talking about either.
Really? No, good.
Okay, your research put you in a hole.
Good at research. I have backed myself into a corner.
What have I done? I mean, I think you're always tinkering and changing things in the sport. Oh, I raced more frequently. That was it.
There we go.
Oh, that must have been it for sure. That's what you
meant.
Thank you for bailing me out. I appreciate you making up an answer for me.
Yes. No, that was something I did, was that basically, we went down to plan my season, and I was like, what do I love about triathlon? I love racing. Like, I'm a racehorse. I'm a competitive person. And in the past, when I do these huge training blocks, I sometimes get myself into trouble because it's like, I get too fit and then I get greedy and then I get injured. And so the aim is to be consistent year after year. Like, that's how you get better, is if you can train and race consistently and be constantly sort of turning the dial one notch higher, getting one day better. And so this last year in 2017, I decided I was going to race a little bit more frequently just to keep things fresh, keep myself motivated, keep myself out of trouble. And because why not? You know, I think my attitude was like, you know, there's only so many years I have left that I can race, and there's so many opportunities out there to race and places to see and do. So I raced a lot more frequently and I really enjoyed it.
What is too fit? What does that look like?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess one thing that I've learned about my body is that I just, when I apply myself to training, the fitness usually comes on pretty fast, and you can only hold sort of peak fitness for so long. So we do a lot of our training based off of heart rate. And once you get running at a certain pace, like, it becomes a pace that's fun to run at and a pace that's fast, but it's a pace also that sometimes you can get yourself in trouble with. Like, you shouldn't be running that fast for that long throughout the year, because it tends to just either metabolically wear you down, or you're going to get an injury from it, or something negative usually could happen. So yeah, just getting, I don't know, I guess you can only attain a certain level of fitness, and then you just get greedy and it's like, you can get too fit.
Hmm. Mm. Who knew? I didn't know that.
How many times throughout the year do you try to peak, like an A race sort of peak?
Yeah, probably about twice. I think about twice a year, you can really put yourself all in for about two events. And I mean, every race is, I look at as an A race for me. I'm just a competitor. I want to win. I want to be on the podium. I want to go as fast as I can. I want to go after course records. So, I mean, I look at every race as an opportunity and sort of an A race, but we usually base my season around, you know, one or two sort of peaks in the year and take two breaks as well.
Hmm. Which were the two this year?
Exactly. Boy,
it was what, Ironman Canada and Kona?
Yeah. Yeah. Canada and Hawaii.
Hmm. Let's talk about Hawaii here. I think we've made probably a few records set going 45 minutes chatting on a triathlon podcast, not talking about Kona yet.
Yep. With a pro.
When I land on the Big Island, I feel crushed. Like, I get off the plane and the first thing that I think is like, I've never raced it, but I get out, and both times that I've been there, I'd been training for a race coming in, say, the 1 to 3 weeks right after Kona. So I'm still doing a fair bit of really purposeful training. And I get off the plane going like, oh my God, how am I going to do these key workouts? And I've heard, I think this is right on your website, but I feel very cautious of my research now. You say that you love landing on the Big Island. Like, what are the vibes that you get when you step off the plane?
Not crushed by humidity like the rest of us?
Oh, no, I feel crushed too. I feel like, how are we going to do a race in this? But I think that that's the allure and the excitement. I have so many memories of being in Hawaii, racing there, friends that I have there, experiences I've had. So, and generally, I think every year I've gotten off the plane in Hawaii, I've been super fit and super excited to race and about the opportunity. Thankful to be there. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of like mixed emotions. A little bit now it's different. I mean, the first few times I raced there was 100% excitement and just so pumped to be there, grinning ear to ear. But I know now how much that race hurts, both mentally and physically, and how much you have to put into it, that I get off the plane and I just am a bit more, I'm excited, but I also know I'm in for a world of hurt come October 11th or whatever day the race is.
But it smells so good. I mean, there's that. Yeah, it smells exactly amazing, right? When you get off the plane.
Yes, exactly.
That doesn't compensate for the pain.
It smells like hot asphalt and pain to me.
And you haven't even raced it.
Yeah.
Get ready.
Yeah. Well, someday, I hope. I was in transition shooting when you got out of the water, and it was like right as you were running up to your bike, you're screaming something. This year, 2017, or this past year, 2017, what was going on there when you got out of the water?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So we have to carry these GPS trackers. And I think that I had lost my tracker. And if you don't carry a tracker for the entire bike and run, then you're disqualified. So I think I was yelling that I lost my tracker and I needed a new tracker. And I didn't want to get slowed down having to wait for the tracker. So I was probably on adrenaline yelling that I needed a tracker for the entire pier, which probably wasn't necessary.
When did you realize that
I got a tracker, so that's good.
When did you realize you'd lost it?
Oh, as soon as I got out of the water, and I think just leaving transition, maybe. Oh, yeah. What happened was I raced in a short sleeve aero top, and the tracker was in the top to put on for the bike portion. And I think it had fallen out as I was putting on the top, and I didn't go back and get it, or it had fallen out before I put on the top. But I realized once the top was on that it wasn't in my pocket. So I was yelling to get a new one, and they were awesome. They had one waiting for me. I didn't even have to stop. So
that's
got to
be
out
a
well.
Panic feeling, yeah. Though, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, if they say to you, you have to have one or you're going to be disqualified, then you got part of your job is to make sure you have one.
Yeah, those few minutes, like when you ran out of transition, there were probably a good dozen of us that were looking around going,
what happened?
I don't know what she was so worked up about, but it looked really serious.
Oh, no, yeah. Like I said, it probably was a little dramatic. Made it worse than it was, adrenaline.
You got to be, right? Like you said, you need that. You get disqualified otherwise. There's not really a redo there. So,
yeah.
So walk through the rest of the race. Fourth American woman overall, I believe. And what was your take on this year?
I wasn't super pumped about my race, I'll be honest. I thought I would run better than I ran. I went into the race pretty confident in my run abilities. And in fact, I was so excited about running that I maybe even dialed back the bike a little bit just to ensure that I would be able to deliver a great run. I thought I would be able to run in the low threes. And I was a little disappointed in my swim. But I'd been dealing with a shoulder injury most of the year, and my swim mileage was down than prior years. So overall, for considering like where I was at, I thought my swim was on par with the training that I had done. And then the bike, I mean, I executed the bike according to what my coach and I had laid out as far as a plan goes, to the best of my abilities. And really, it's all about setting yourself up for a great run. So I thought I stuck to our plan to enable me to run well. And I ran great for the first half. And then the last half coming out of the energy lab, I just wasn't able to turn the dial the way I thought I would. And I think around a 312 or 313 maybe. And it was so close. I mean, in the energy lab, we were all stacked up. And even in the energy lab, I thought for sure I would be able to run my way into the top 10, maybe even top five if I had a great run, and then I just wasn't able to do it. And that's still haunting me. So it's just frustrating when you put so much work and time and energy and then you can't do it. But at the same time, like I also battled through when I wasn't feeling good, and I just did the best I could with what I had. And that's really all you can ask of yourself, right? Is it's like, did I, you know, stick to my plan on the bike? I did. Did I nail my nutrition? I did. Did I try to cool off as best as I could and handle the heat and humidity? I really thought I did a good job with that. And it's just kind of like, those were the cards you were dealt. And after the race, you know, we celebrated and then I had some time to reflect and chatted with my coach, and we've just learned from our mistakes and learned what we could do differently and move on from there. So I think it was my 10th or 11th Ironman Hawaii finish as a professional. And that's a huge accolade to have. So there's positives that came from it. I think I've been in the top 15 every year but one that I've raced there. So that's another huge, like, nobody else can really, not many people can say that, I don't think. But an outcome and results standpoint, I was a little bummed.
Do you go in thinking as a pro, I could win this? Like, I actually could end up winning this? Or are your expectations set on, I'm going to be somewhere in the, you know, 8 to 15 range or something like that?
Yeah, I do both. I mean, Hawaii is a hard race to set a time on because the conditions there are so variable and such large question marks. Some races I'll set time goals for. You know, I mean, I thought I had the run fitness to run a low 3-hour marathon, but the bike, you don't know what's going to happen with the wind. So I don't really set a time goal for Hawaii, but I have kind of a general idea of like, okay, this is what I've been doing in training for as far as running goes. I feel pretty confident that I could run XYZ time. And I never really go into races expecting to win. I think expectation is a tough thing to place on yourself. I definitely go in, you know, hoping to put myself in a position to be competitive. And if the opportunity is there, I want to be prepared for it. And that's, I think if anything, I just prepare for any type of scenario. But I've never gone into Hawaii thinking like I expect to be in this position. You know, I think every year my goal is to hopefully be in a position to be battling for the top 10 or the top 5 or the top 3 in the later stages of the race. But sometimes that's worked out and sometimes it hasn't. And if anything, though, I just think all my mental preparation leading into a race is more things that are controllable, things that are sort of process driven, and mainly goals that I have that are within myself. So
conditions wise, was it a hard year or an easy year? Because we see bike course records, overall course records being broken, but then look at DNF records or the DNF rate. I think for age groupers, it was actually high.
Yeah, it was kind of a medium year. I don't think I've had it way worse than the swim. So the swim was probably about normal. It was a little chop, a little swell. The bike was pretty mild, not crazy windy. It's always humid. I mean, there was definitely some winds. I mean, we didn't have like a perfectly calm day, but it was not the craziest winds I've ever seen in Kona either. And it was pretty hot. I mean, people have said to me like, oh, it was such a hot year out there. I remember a few years where we've had cloud cover and it was pretty cool as far as Hawaii goes. But I thought across the board, it was kind of a medium year. And I think the times were fast because the bike was fast. It was my guess. Yeah, in general. And I don't think anyone ran, well, Patrick Lang ran really fast. And so did Danielle. But overall, though, I think the run times were maybe a little bit slower, and that would probably be because it was hotter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just being out there on the day this year compared to, I want to say, 2013, like it seemed more like dead hot, but not
crushing. In 2015, the year I had the stress fracture in my femur, I went to watch the race, and it was so hot that year. I'm like, how do we race in this? My mind was blown, and there was no cloud. I think that was in general a really hot year, but I was just that was the first time I've spectated Ironman Hawaii, and I was in awe. Like, it was such a hard day. I would have rather been racing.
I want to start wrapping up here and be respectful of getting you to dinner or wherever you need to go. I have a bit of a confession. Before Kim doesn't know this, but before I started making my first YouTube videos, I was watching your husband, Chris, on YouTube. And I was like, oh my goodness, I want to make those videos. And it probably took me about 250 tries to do it. But he was an inspiration in picking up a camera and learning how to edit. So pass that along to him. It was like, I was a little bit fangirlish when we met him at the Cliff Bar House in Kona this year.
So the whole reason that started was that he would come to races. He's not a triathlete. And he would just, the gun would go, I'd be off, and it'd be like, all right, see you in 4 or 5 hours. And he was like, what am I going to do this whole time? And so he started just videoing clips on his iPhone. And then while I was out on the race course, he would edit it all on his iPhone. And then within like an hour of being done with the race, he'd have like an entire race day video that he shot and edited on his iPhone. And then he would post it and they went nuts. People were like, oh, these race day videos. And around that time, Twitter was taking off. So he would do race day tweeting. And then eventually he graduated from the iPhone to a nicer camera, to a nicer camera, to editing on his computer, to editing
he's
on a nice
trailblazer
computer.
Really.
And now he's got a drone, and now it's his job. He does it for work for a bunch of different companies. So he'll be pumped to hear you liked his work. And I do too. I'm a fan. So.
Oh, that's so nice. Well, we actually met you and your husband for the very first time at the Cliff House, correct, Taryn? In 2013, when he hijacked our honeymoon and made us go watch the race in Kona. Yes. Yeah. Chris did not hijack our honeymoon. Taryn did. He said, we're going to go to Kona for our honeymoon to watch the race.
Perfect.
And I said, well, at least it's Hawaii. But yeah, that's when I got addicted to it and fell in love with it too. So I'm a professional fan.
I love it. Well, the sport exists because of people like you. So thank you.
Last question here with, you know, a really long career with, I mean, besides that one rough year, you've killed it, like podiums all over the place. What still motivates you to keep going?
I think a couple things are still motivating me. I still love it and I'm still enjoying it and having fun. And I still feel like I'm getting things out of myself. And that's ultimately what it's all about is, are you bettering yourself? And are you able to get the most out of yourself? And are you enjoying it? And I think when I can't answer those three questions or one of the three of them, then I'll know like, okay, it's been time. But I'm also a competitor. I love to win. I would love to win a few more Ironmans before I'm finished. And I think I had some great luck at Kona in 2008, and 2010, 2012. And then I feel like the last 4 years or so, I just have not performed to my capability. And that definitely is, you know, a motivator or a driver. That's for sure why I keep going back to Hawaii is you just question in the back of your mind, like, what can I do? What could I do better? What could I do differently? And I think that that's why Kona is a beast and keeps us all coming back for more. And I may not ever have that question answered by the time my career is finished, but I want to at least give it a try. Yeah. So that's it. I'm still enjoying it. And there's still places I want to see. There's for sure some bucket list races that I would like to do. So I've got, I think, 4 or 5 more years left to tick off some boxes.
Is just finishing Kona, though, still a high level of satisfaction? Just to say, I did that. That is the hardest thing that there is in this sport, and I did it. Or because you're a pro with expectations of certain finishing, finishing in certain spots, that it isn't that anymore?
Well, I mean, currently at this point in my career, I don't feel like I need to finish. Like, I know what Kona is. It is hard. It takes a piece of your soul every time you do it. And you have to put so much into it in the preparation and lead up to properly race there. So I'm definitely not racing just to finish it. I feel like I've kind of done that before. So I will say, though, I've raced, I think 10 or 11, I need to look. That's horrible that I don't know. But I would like to do 15 of them as a professional before I'm done. So I for sure have, I think, 4 more to go in me. So
15 in the top 15. And if you, if
yeah,
you took like
15 and 15.
Yeah.
That's
if
cool.
You took that Austria or the Ironman Canada performance into Kona, look out. Danger.
Yes, exactly.
Let's wrap it up here and tell people where they should follow you online, Lindsay.
All right. Well, thanks for listening and thanks for talking with me. And I hope to meet some people at the races this year. And you can follow me through my webpage, lindsaycorbin.com. And I'm also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
And it's all just at Lindsay Corbin, right? No hashtags or hieroglyphics in there?
No.
And it's Lindsay without a D.
Yes, LINSEYCORBIN.
Lindsay. Well, thank you very much for being on the show here, Lindsay. Appreciate it.
Yes, thanks for having me.
It's great
to
chat.
Talk to you
soon. Thanks. Bye. If there was anything on the podcast that you heard and you want to know more about, you can visit our show notes at triathlonterran.com/topics/triathlonterranpodcast. We'll have all of the links listed there. Any other info that you may not have had time to write down or whatever, it's listed there for you in perpetuity.
Something newer, juicier, freer.
We love free.
We've had resources kind of scattered throughout the website for the past year that we've built up. Well, I have put that all on one single page on the website at triathlonterran.com/free resources. Just by entering your email address, you can get a free swim drill program, a free strength training program, a running drill program. And as we start coming out with things, everything will be there. So you can check it now, you can check it later.
Come early, come often. Mm-hmm. We'll be adding stuff all the time, so make sure you check it out frequently. Also, if you've got questions for Taryn, and many of you do, and you leave them in the YouTube comments, Facebook, Instagram, etc., we're trying to aggregate that all into one spot so everybody can see and hear the answer. And that's why we've now launched the Triathlon Trainiask podcast, because it's trainiacs asking questions. So what we want you to do is head over to triathlontaryn.com/trainiask. If you have a question, you'll record it and Taryn may answer it on the podcast. He's recording them every single weekday, and you can find the podcast on every single podcast player out there. And Trainiask is spelled T-R-A-I-N-I-A-S-K.
Short nuggets of info. Every right. episode, I guarantee under 10 minutes.
Perfect.
And it's hard to get me to stop talking, so this is a feat. Finally, last thing that you can do is, if you like this show or the Trainiask show when you check it out, head over to iTunes, give us a review, good, bad, indifferent. Hopefully 5 stars, because we're pretty awesome.
Reviews just really help us out.
It really helps with the iTunes algorithm. However it happens, it works. It's internet magic and helps other new or aspiring trainiacs discover us. So that would be much appreciated.
Thanks, folks. See you next time.